Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. Today we are going to continue our series and going over tips in filmmaking, specifically looking at the production process. So this first episode is going to highlight the mindset, overall opinion, and kind of approach you should have when taking on the production of a feature film. Then in the next episode, part two, we're going to try and get a little bit more tactical, give you guys little tips and tidbits that you can use to help improve that production process for you. As always, be sure to check out our links online. The place to find us is going to be our Discord channel, because that is where we can work with our fans and where we can cast our fans. So if you've ever wanted to be on these projects, get more in detailed insights, all you have to do, go ahead, take a look online and join us there. So, you know, production, I think, as we kind of mentioned in pre-production, when filmmakers typically look at the process, I think the biggest focus is on production, but I think it's for the wrong reasons. I think they kind of have, you know, this idea that, well, we'll figure it out on set, or we'll do it on set, or, you know, that's the most important part. Production gets the most attention, and it obviously should, because it is one of the most critical parts of the filmmaking process. And it's also something where, you know, I think it's the most glamorous part in a lot of people's minds, you know, being on set, the commotion, the action, that's what you think of when you think of filmmaking. In reality, I think production is really the most stressful and shortest process, but it's also the one that, you know, really you want to be set up for production and just ensure it goes smoothly, you know, more so than just enjoying it or embracing the production process. Our goal is really just making it so it works and we get a finished product done. So, you know, I think our mindset is we're pretty, you know, stressed over the idea of going into production because we know just how much can go wrong.
Yeah, and I've talked about this before. I think that, you know, the way I look at it, the way and the amount of time that I put into pre-production, my whole goal is that if something happens to me on set, if I cannot direct this movie, that the movie can still be completed, that somehow the actors can work together. They understand what they need to do. They understand what they need to accomplish, how they need to act, you know, the overall tone of the movie, and they're able to finish it themselves without a director. And having that mindset and trying to give that clarity of direction in the pre-production phase will make your production so much easier, because if they completely understand how to make this movie, how to complete this movie from start to finish, without my input or my direction, then, you know, that level of communication and clarity makes your production so much easier. So that's kind of the mindset I go into making these movies, is I want to make sure that everyone is so clear on the direction of the movie, so clear on the objectives that we're looking to complete as far as like tone and just the overall flow of the movie. If I can make it that clear that they can do it themselves, then, you know, I succeeded as a director in my pre-production. And then your actual production is going to be so much easier, because at that point, I'm just kind of guiding the ship. I'm making small little corrections. There's nothing major in there. And I think that having that mindset is how you really make your production as smooth as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And the way I see production is, with us being the editing mindset, you know, we talk about all the time where we look at it, what is this final picture going to look like? How's it going to cut together from the very beginning, from the point where we start writing, from the point where we start doing pre-production? All of it is focused on that editor's mindset. And when we go into the production process, we're really just trying to avoid those landmines. And again, production is really going to be something where, simply due to the nature of filmmaking, and I think this is the next point I want to highlight, you know, I think a lot of people that say they're filmmakers, and anyone who does make film is a filmmaker. You know, I don't want to act like it's any kind of pretension or anything when it comes to that title. You know, I think it is something where any type of film makes you a filmmaker. But I think one of the biggest things with this industry that if you look at compared to other industries or other creatives is the limited amount of practice you have on set. you know, if you think of it from a musician, you can always pick up your guitar, you can play your guitar, you can always go ahead and paint. You typically don't have this level of practice. And I think the biggest thing that people underestimate is how much can go wrong on production. So do you want to talk about how, because of the limited experience most filmmakers have, it's almost like, you know, a minefield waiting to explode on them?
Yeah, I just think, you know, it comes down to how many reps do you have actually in front of a camera? And for an indie film, most of your actors are going to be relatively new. They're going to have not a lot of experience. And, you know, when you're taking all these people, you're sticking them in a pressure cooker and, you know, you're sticking them, you know, essentially on a set that they have to work for 16 to 18 hour days, 8 days in a row. You know, it's very difficult for them to, you know, mold and mesh together for the entire, you know, time of filming. So, I mean, that's just the actors. And then you have your crew, your DP probably, you know, doesn't have a lot of reps behind them, doesn't have a lot of film experience behind them. If you're an indie, you know, you're doing an indie movie. A lot of times, a lot of these people have a lot of short experience. So they may have done a lot of shorts. A short is a completely different beast than a feature. I wouldn't even consider them anything close, just because of how much you have to actually do. In a short, you know, I can make an 8-minute short and be completely relaxed and, you know, be able to really, you know, set up my lighting, be able to get the shots that I wanted. And I can do that all in an 8-hour period. You know, on a feature film, it's so much quicker. It's so much faster. And that time deadline is always pushing down on you. You start to get behind. And it's just such a different beast than a short. You're compromising constantly. So if your crew has just only short experience, if your actors have only have experience working on shorts, you know, they're not going to see the problems that a feature film actually, you know, can bring forth. So, you know, the only way to understand these problems and pitfalls is to do them and learn from, you know, experience. But you just have to keep that in mind, especially if you're working with a younger crew or, you know, fresh actors. You're not going to have the, you know, the experience and knowledge that you get from some higher budget sets, because those people are just going to demand more money. That's going to be out of your budget range as an indie filmmaker.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one of the biggest mindsets I want to stress on this is because of that inexperience that everyone has. I mean, if you looked at us on our first few movies, we had no clue what we were doing. We were kind of walking around. And again, we assembled a team, and the team, they did a great job. We have finished features, but they were still learning as well too. So I think this goes back to, again, why you really want to do everything yourself. You know, that David Fincher approach where he literally did all elements of production, pre-production, writing, editing, so he could at least understand what's going on. Because if you don't know what's going on, it just leaves the room open for so many more issues to arise on production, things you've never experienced before. And I would almost always say this, especially to first indie filmmakers, your production is going to go wrong. That production you have in your head is never going to happen. It's never going to be that smooth. I would say, you know, realistically, it took us basically until The Haunting of the Murder House, our 10th movie, before we had not critical issues happened when it came to just the production. You know, Girl in Cabin 13, we had a big delay on the special effects, which really put us back. And that was a huge crunch. We still managed to get it within that time frame, but it basically took us 10 feature films before we got a production shoot that we were comfortable with, and comfortable still meant staying up 24 hours the end of the day just to get everything done there. So I really want to stress this. If you are a first-time filmmaker, it is going to go wrong. Plan way more time in advance and expect the unexpected. With that being said, if you are not fully prepared for this, the set is not the time to work things out. The set is the time to understand and compromise and get things done. So again, this is just kind of a warning lesson, because I think a lot of people think about production, but they have a completely different idea. You know, it's going to be on set. We're going to talk things over. We'll get this done. You just lose time. It's a time crunch. It is the number one thing. You have to protect every single millisecond that you have on set, because again, the way that these features cost, if you screw up your production, you can look at doubling your budget instantly. just because you have to get the crew back together, if you get all of these things together. So really understand just how critical and how crucial every second is. So with that being said, you know, I think to give people who haven't been on set an idea, walk me through what a typical DBS set looks like, the amount of days, the time, and what you kind of relate it to just from your experience now.
So, you know, we've added more days since we started shooting the earlier films just to get to the hour 20 mark, which is usually what distribution companies want, just because they can stack the ads on there for AVOD and it's just more lucrative. So we have added a couple days to our sets from our earlier stuff. That being said, we're way more efficient now. The amount of footage that we get compared to, you know, our earlier movies is almost double. So we're still very, very fast. We're very, very lean. But our typical shoots are about 8 days. And we start shooting, you know, start to finish, you know, essentially day one. We'll usually get to the location in the afternoon. I'll take the actors out to get food. We'll get supplies. We'll move the equipment in. And I'll probably try and shoot for 5 or 6 hours that first night. So after the first day, for the remaining 7 days, we typically shoot for about 14 to 16 hours. I always make sure the actors have 8 hours of rest time. And I tell them, if you're going to do the 8 hours, try and make it sleep. But obviously a set is a very active, high adrenaline situation. Everyone's really excited. It can be hard for them to sleep. But I always make sure they have 8 hours of downtime. And I'd always recommend that. Do not skimp on the downtime, especially early in the shoot, because they're just going to get tired and they're going to get kind of in a funk. So always make sure, you know, once it hits that point where I know that we have to stop shooting and I have to give them the 8 hours, that's when we essentially stop. But that being said, like, some actors aren't in all the scenes, so they can break or take a nap. We kind of segment the script now, so they're kind of broken up into little groups, so I could work with one actor and the rest could sleep. We've done that multiple times and it works out pretty well. But I mean, you know, we're going all the way through, and, you know, I'm not stopping shooting, especially for myself, you know, until we essentially get kicked out of the location. So you always want to stack your hardest scenes first and end on your easy stuff. So while Cal and the crew are cleaning up the location that we're in, I'm out shooting B-roll until, you know, the sun rises, or we essentially the last minute that we have to leave, just to make sure that I get as much footage as possible. I'm always trying to get more footage than the last shoot. That is one metric that I track, is to try and, in the 8 days, how much raw footage can I possibly get? And, you know, we're seeing exponential gains from Girl in Cabin 13 to The Murder House to The Shapeshifter, which was our best one yet as far as just getting raw footage. But, you know, the shoots are quick, they're fast. The 8 days are going to go the fastest 8 days of your life. So, I mean, you really have to make sure you plan this stuff in, you know, advance, because, you know, being on set and trying to figure things out, like Kel said, is not the place you want to, you know, practice. You want to make sure that everything is smooth. You know exactly what you're doing, because the minute you have to stop and start to think about things or try and practice things, or your vision starts to become cloudy and not very clear, is when, you know, things are going to start to fall apart on your set.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, there's a famous quote to bring him up again from David Fincher, where he mentions, you get 70% of what you want from a production, you're doing good. And after going through the production process, I think we completely understand how that, you know, makes total sense to us. I think a lot of things that people in the filmmaking industry who aren't familiar with production always assume that the final product they have is exactly what the director wanted. And I guarantee you, every single production for essentially the existence of mankind, I would even say, there was something they wanted that they couldn't get. And for the most part, I think indie filmmakers probably come up on the 40 to 50% mark and they have a broken film. with us, I would probably wager we're up to the 80 or 90% mark. And the only reason for that is because we have to be, because we're operating at such a shoestring budget. We don't have the luxury of a 30% fluff that we might be able to miss or not, kind of like you'll see in the Hollywood film. So expect that things are going to go wrong. Expect it's going to be hard. And you know what you were mentioning, typically we're doing 14 to 16 hours for the cast and crew, but a lot of it's segmented for them in the sense where, you know, hey, you're not in this scene, go take a nap, go lay down. We always tell them fight for your sleep. Like I love it when I see an actor taking a nap if they're not on set, because when we need them on set, that's when we need their energy and their motivations and things like that. And I mean, you know, day one, two, three, even four, you can power through. You can't power through a day seven. You can't power through a day eight. If you're lacking on sleep, it compounds. And one thing to mention, while the actors and the other talent can break, you know, we don't get a break. It's something where you're the producer, you're the filmmaker, you are going the entire time. You are not going to get that luxury of 8 hours of sleep. You might get 6 hours, you're probably going to get 5 hours. And literally the last few days, we're typically not getting any sleep whatsoever. And that's on our end. You know, we really fight for that on our talent to make sure they have the rights, because again, you know, the actors and the talent, it's different the way that we see it. If you're taking this ownership of this project, expect to get even less. You know, you have to be the one leading the charge. And I think this is a good segue. I think the way that we see it now and the way that I at least see it is our overall goal is to capture and maintain that momentum. You will feel momentum on a production. And do you want to just kind of start going into what that momentum is, how we see it, and how it is the most critical thing as a producer or a filmmaker is you are in charge of the momentum of the film shoot, because it literally will make or break your movie.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what I was talking about before, as far as just making sure or having such a clear vision and clear communication to the actors that they can essentially direct themselves. I think one thing I see with a lot of indie films, and we've had a lot of issues on our previous films, was like the, you know, everyone thinks they're like Hitchcock, you know, or Kubrick. They're trying to really like go and fine tune all these minute details like body language or facial reactions or just the way people say things. Number one, this should have been all done in pre-production. And number two, you just don't have the time to really go and sit down and really like hone all this stuff out with these actors. If you start to micromanage your actors, they're going to get upset, they're going to get frustrated, and you're going to waste an absolute ton of time. So, you know, how I direct now is I almost just look for momentum. And what I mean by momentum is I want to get both actors relaxed and comfortable with each other. And you'll feel it. The whole set will kind of liven up and you start to feel like you're getting really good takes and everyone's kind of in a groove and a rhythm. And so my job is to get the actors to that point, because there it is a skill to get them to that level. You have to make them comfortable. You have to kind of work with them a little bit to just, you know, get a little confidence going. But once they're there, you know, I kind of let them go. And I want to just run through as many scenes, as many sequences as we possibly can, because once you have momentum, you know, my job is to continually push them until, you know, obviously we have to either break for the night for some food or drinks, or we have to reset something up. But the longer you can keep that momentum, that's when you really make a ton of progress. And I think we did a really good job in the Shapeshifter movie of capturing that momentum and running through an absolute ton of scenes and sequences. Because I remember, I think it was like day 4 or 5, we had an absolute ton of stuff to do. It was probably one of the better days in DBS history. And they weren't very hard scenes or sequences, but we captured that momentum and we probably knocked out 15 or 16 pages of that script just because the actors got in a groove, they got in a rhythm, they were comfortable with me, and we just kind of let them run. And we just knocked out an immense amount of that script. But that's a testament to the actors. I mean, they did such a good job. They're able to keep that momentum and they're able to keep going. And they were probably tired. They were probably hungry. And, you know, we had small breaks in there. But for the most part, that was probably one of the only days that I can remember where we captured the momentum early in the morning and we kept it going all the way through till late at night.
And it really is something that's super critical. Don't expect, as a first-time indie filmmaker, to even come close to the production that we have now because of the experience we hold. Also, that team, they were actors we worked with before. They were already comfortable. So there's a lot that goes into it. And I think before we move on, I want to just kind of give you a comparison. The Invited, you know, I'll never forget The Invited because it was a grandiose idea we never should have bit off. And I think, honestly, in my opinion, The Invited is the closest to what I typically see in the indie film community. You'll come up with an idea that's a lot harder to execute. You simply don't know it's that hard to execute. You just think, hey, you know, we'll get this. It'll be great. And the point I'm going back to is the first day that I was on set for The Invited, we had a shot of our main actor waking up and getting out of bed and going down the stairs and out the door. That was like the first scene. And I think that scene took us 3 hours, maybe four, maybe even longer. I can't remember there. To give you an idea now, with everything that we know and the way we've consolidated our production and the way that we've done it, probably in that 3 hours, which again, maybe 35 seconds of footage I think we got from The Invited for that, of like once you cut it all together and get it, and again, this is changing location, changing lighting, all that stuff, to where we're at now, that same 4 hours, we probably got like 10 minutes when we were in that peak momentum phase of it. And that only comes from experience. That only comes from understanding it. So quickly, do you want to talk about how just the efficiencies you see from where we were to where we are now? And again, where we were is where most indie filmmakers, if it's your first film feature production, is where you're going to find yourself. That's just how the process works.
Yeah, it's just, and it comes back to just being leaner and obviously having experience and, you know, understanding. Now that I'm the DP, you know, I practice a lot of this stuff. I know I've pretty much almost at this point have done every single basic shot that you can possibly imagine. So I understand how to get actors in and out of rooms, which seems very easy, and it's really not. How you actually do that and do it in a cinematic way is kind of difficult. Well, it's not difficult, but it requires thinking. In order to think properly, you have to have experience doing it. The two scenes that always come back and haunt me was, number one, the one that Kel mentioned with Invited, where we have a main character waking up, running down a staircase, exiting a house, and getting into a car, right? And that took 3 or 4 hours for that. And now I could probably knock that out with a Ronin shot, a couple of tripod panning shots. I could put the shoulder rig on and pan. I can knock that shot out in maybe 30 minutes. So you're going from 30 minutes to 3 hours. The second scene that always really bothers me is the beginning of the Morgan estate. We have a girl in the closet. We have her look and see a figure. She goes down some steps and then she tries to escape. And then she ultimately gets stabbed. That scene probably took us 8 or 9 hours. I can knock that out easily within an hour, hour and a half, and it wouldn't be a problem. The biggest problem would be the special effects blood, which I'm not even concerned about. We've done stabbing scenes a million times. But to just see the growth that we have now, we went from 3 hours down to 30 minutes and 8 hours down to probably an hour and a half. So that time compression just allows us to do so much other things. It allows you to focus on other shots, but that just comes from experience. For the shapeshifter, we had a very technical opening scene, which required multiple characters running in and out of locations. It required a mask. It required a fight scene and special effects. And I'm trying to think, we probably started shooting this at 8 p.m. and we wrapped maybe at 2 or 3. So that's 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It's about 7 or 8 hours of footage. And that scene turned out to be 7 or 8 minutes. Well, I was talking to an actor on set and she had done a short film and it was an 8-minute short and it probably had less technical stuff than this one. And they took 7 days. So if you look at other films, and obviously like they probably had better cinematics and lighting than we had in that scene because we're very run and gun, but just give you an idea of, you know, the speed and pace that we're operating at. What takes someone 7 days, we did in 8 hours. So, you know, that's just where you get to from experience and understanding how the process works. And I think that's the only way you can really get to that point. We've done a lot of practice. We've done a lot of footage. And not only have we shot footage, we've uploaded footage to different platforms so we can get to see the final product. If you're just shooting raw footage and you're not actually editing it together, you're not doing color correction, you're not finally uploading it, it's not going to be as valuable, because I can see here in practice as much as I wanted to, but if I'm not, you know, taking that thing to the finish line, then, you know, it's really not as valuable, you know, as a skill. And, you know, that experience only comes through when you do a final upload.
Yeah. And I think that's something I just want to highlight as critical. Like, do not expect to even come close to the level of production you can have if you don't have the experience. Because again, like, just looking at what we did know, what we didn't know. I think one tip I do want to offer, and I think this is something that I see a lot in the indie filmmaking. I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I think people compare themselves to Hollywood way too much. I think they think they need to have a lot of people on set. They think they need to have all of this stuff. And one of the biggest ones I'll point back to is lighting. I mean, that lighting was the biggest issue for getting them out of the house. And what it was is someone saying the lighting's not right. It's not here. It's not there. And I think it really is a personal opinion. I think there's bad lighting in the sense that your character's not lit. But man, the amount of times we spent getting these industrial sized lights to kind of get working and, you know, how we're doing it, and people like, oh, move it this way, move it that way. I mean, right now we kind of have it where we know what the lighting we like is and we can set it up incredibly quickly. So I think when people start doing the indie filmmaking process, they literally try and do too much. And because they're not skilled at it, it takes them way too long and it comes out worse. Well, my biggest recommendation would be incredibly minimalistic. Just try and keep it as low as possible on the crew. Try and keep your lighting as basic as possible on the crew. If you're trying to do some crazy type of lighting and you haven't been on set before, you're going to most likely fail at it to begin with. And literally natural lighting of just having the lights on or off is going to be better. So what are kind of your opinions on most filmmakers jumping into it? Because I mean, honestly, I think less is more. It really is, because you're going to waste time. It's not going to be that good. And more so than getting the lighting right, not having a finished product because you didn't get enough footage is going to crush you and not get you to upload.
Yeah, on the indie level, I completely agree. I think less is more, pretty much throughout the entire process. Usually our best scripts are the most simple scripts. Our best productions are the most simple productions. Editing wise, same thing. The simpler it is, the no crazy special effects, no crazy CGI. You know, the found footage is probably our better editing stuff just because it's so simple. Even on the distribution aspect of it, distribution companies that are bigger and more prestigious, for most people, may not be the best fit. You're better off for someone, you know, distribution company that's going to take care of your film and just be more aggressive as far as like AVOD and smaller platforms that don't come with all the bells or whistles or the big marketing fees. Usually those are the better ones. So all the way through this process, I think less is more. And if you really focus on cost and being minimalistic, you're going to have a better time. And I think the big grand, you know, shooting strategies, which Kel was talking about, come from Hollywood because they can shoot a page a day and that's aggressive for them. The page a day, that's, we did a lot of work today. And, you know, when you shoot a page a day, you can get a ton of different angles. You could take time to set up your lights and, you know, you could really have time to sit there and work with the actors and really get a ton of takes and really get the performance that you want. We have a huge budget, you know, getting you there. And as an indie filmmaker, you just don't have that. So I think a lot of indie films come from people who are, you know, grips or PAs or, you know, ACs on bigger Hollywood films. And I think they could take that and, you know, bring it to the indie, you know, film level. And they quickly realize it's not the same as, you know, a Hollywood film, that time is, you know, much more valuable on an indie set. And also I think it comes from a lot of people just not understanding the process because they just don't have a lot of experience. So, you know, that was my mindset when I first started. I said, look, I could hire a whole bunch of people who know what they're doing to help accelerate my timeline, get better products. And that was the opposite was the case. Our movie started getting much better when we had a smaller crew. So, you know, obviously, you know, as far as like lightings and, you know, setting up sets, I try and go as fast as possible, but I still understand, like, I get the lighting that I want. Now, we're very fortunate to make horror movies, so obviously minimalistic lighting is even better. You know, you want dark, atmospheric lighting, and you don't need the bright romance lighting that you see in other movies. So it's a benefit to, you know, making horror movies. You know, Girl in Cabin 13 was a little all over the place as far as lighting, and I spent a lot of time like learning how to properly light things on a budget and on speed that we need to get to. Murder House didn't have any really lights because it was supposed to be in a dark house. So we pretty much just lit to just make sure you can kind of see the actors. Everything else is very dark in that movie. It's not very cinematic, but that's kind of the feel we were going for. You know, we wanted to shoot with lower exposure to get a little bit of grain, to make it a little grittier. And I think it turned out well. So that was all intentional. And then in Shapeshifter, I was like, all right, look, I want to do a test here. I want to see if people are going to really understand, you know, lighting, if the average Joe is going to understand lighting as far as, you know, is this light coming from a lamp or is it coming from the moon? And see if that's like an issue. And so what I did for that one was I just made it look as cinematic as possible. The locations of the lights don't really make any sense, but the movie looks absolutely gorgeous. And it's going to be interesting to see if people notice that. But I think people are more concerned with the actual look of the movie than nitpicking, you know, essentially where the lighting's coming from. As long as you're consistent with your lighting sources, I think you're in good shape. But it will be a good split test to see if anyone brings that up. Because if not, then The Shapeshifter was the first movie I felt that we really almost 100x'd our budget. The budget of that movie looks like a $1 million film. Obviously it has its flaws, but for the most part, it's by far the best and most beautiful movie we've made yet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing I just really kind of want to hit home, just because again, the worst thing to me is because of, I think, the mindset that a lot of indie filmmakers have, they're kind of a one and done, and not even one, maybe like a 0.5. They get to production, they get something, maybe they raise, you know, 200 grand or something on Kickstarter somehow, and they get into this process, and then before they know it, it just explodes on them. And something we mentioned from the very beginning is the best thing you can get from these movies and the best thing you can get from filming and uploading is the experience. And you need to have that focus in mind. And too many people have the focus in mind of, nope, I'm coming up to the plate. This first one's my home run. I'll get it. I'll be a director. I'll be famous in Hollywood. So let's swing for the fences. And I just, you know, looking at where we were, the best thing you can do is do the entire process yourself and get something uploaded. That is by far the best thing to do. Because here's the frank truth about it. A lot of the people you're going to find on the indie level, they don't know what they're doing. The biggest issue in filmmaking is there's so very rare amounts of filmmaking going on outside of Hollywood. Outside of the Hollywood system, you really do not have the amount of reps that people are putting into it. In the sense of, you know, we're making 4 movies a year now at the minimum for the most part, looking to ramp up from there. That is a ton of production. Most indie filmmakers or indie, you know, production people, they're just not putting in the amount of reps. So that team that you're assembling is going to be way, way more inexperienced than you're thinking. And again, the teams that we had, they were absolutely fantastic. But on this level, you are up against Hollywood. While you do not have their budgets, the movies that we are up against are Hollywood movies. And the average viewer is not going to know that. So to me, it's much better to go into the production process, understanding there will be mistakes, learning from the experiences, and setting yourself up that if you don't get any money back from this film, you will survive and you're not on the hook for whatever you ended up promising or those things. And I just really wanted to instill this again, because again, I think production is where these dreams explode on an indie filmmaker. So do you want to briefly talk about real quick how you're up against Hollywood, but you're not Hollywood, and that why the best thing is to temper your expectations, making production as smooth as possible for you, and just surviving to make another film, and how critical that is in your filmmaking process.
Yeah, I mean, it's everyone thinks that they can make a film, and they just don't understand how much of a budget, you know, how much budget plays a factor into, you know, essentially making these things look good. If you were to pull your friends and family and ask them what the cheapest movie they've seen, they're not going to list you a movie that's under $1 million. They, like, no one really is exposed to true indie movies, which are $1 million and less. And there's like Paranormal Activity and a few outliers, but for the most part, everything that you see on TV, everything you see on Netflix, on Hulu, on any of these channels is made for $1 million or more. So for you to come in there as an indie filmmaker and say, look, I got a $20,000, $30,000 budget, I'm going to compete with these $1 million feature films. That's like going in the ring against like Conor McGregor and you have no fighting experience. You don't have a shot. It's just almost impossible. And, you know, even at our experience level, you know, we're trying, I'm actively trying to figure out ways to cheat our looks, to cheat our camera motion, to cheat, you know, our actors, to try and get really good performances so we can compete with these $1 million films. And it's extremely, extremely difficult. And I think it's almost impossible at a micro budget level to compete with the Hollywood movies. It's just, you don't have the time and the resources that they have to really nail the small things. And that's how you make like a really good Hollywood movie, is they can nail the small things. They can do a ton of takes. They can really work with the actors. You just don't have access to that. Now, that being said, I think you need to just lower your expectations and, you know, compete at your level, which is just trying to get your money back. And I think that's like the biggest thing that you should be competing with. Forget, you know, forget trying to get, you know, 90% Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, having this huge blockbuster movie. Just try and make your money back and, you know, learn and just develop and work on the next one. So I think all these filmmakers, you know, they're trying to take their $20,000, $30,000 movies and have it become the next huge blockbuster. I think the odds, you can do it, but man, the odds are so stacked against you. And I think if you come in with that mindset and you're taking that mindset into production, you're going to be in for a lot of pain. And then when you go to post-production, you're going to be in for even more pain. And then when you go to distribution companies and they don't really want to work with you because you got sort of a broken project and you're trying to project a $1 million movie on this thing that they can clearly see is made for 20, 30K, you're in for a lot of pain. And then when you finally get those first couple of royalty checks and they're not even close to, you know, $1 million, then, you know, I think this is where a lot of indie filmmakers give up. Where I think if you come in there with our mindset, which is like, look, I want to make this for as cheap as possible. I want to learn from this. And I want to put forth the best effort that I possibly can. As long as I put forth the best effort I possibly can on this film, then I'm happy with it. And I'm going to learn from it. And we're going to move on and make another film. And I think with that mindset, it's much healthier for your mental health and just conversations when you're working with people in industry. Are much healthier. And I think, you know, it shifts your mindset from one and done, where you only need to make one movie to become famous, to I'm looking at DBS on a yearly time frame. I'm looking on a 3-year time frame, a 5-year time frame, a 10-year time frame. There's different goals all the way through that process. And I know the next movie is not going to be my magnus opus. I'm completely fine with that. As long as I can learn from it, I think we're, you know, and we walk away from the whole process with a better understanding of how to make films, how to make them better, then I win. You know, I've won. There's nothing else I could want from that movie.
I think that really is critical. And that's why I wanted to highlight it, because I think the production process is where you face reality. You know, you can write whatever script you want. It could be that $1 million script. And you can look at that script and be like, I have something so special that no one's ever heard before. And it's just going to be the greatest thing ever. You know, I spent 3, 5, 10 years writing this. And, you know, this is great. Look, we have some money behind this. You know I can do this. I got a great team. And then you show up on set and it explodes. For numerous reasons. Again, things are going to pop up. And in our next episode, we'll talk about individually some of the more tactical ones, but there's two things I really kind of want to cover left in this episode. And since we're on mindset, I do want to go back to the idea that everyone is looking at you and it is critical for you to continue your emotions and to have them in check. I think one of the things is, since we do have experience now, you know, it's very easy for me and my brother to understand what we're getting into, because, you know, on set, it's really this weird time warp effect, and emotions go up and down to the extremes. So when everyone nails a shot and you're happy, you're having fun, you're laughing or everything, but then when it's, you know, the later days and things are dragging, or you're not getting that set, or you're not getting it, people are looking at you to maintain. And I think, you know, one of the best qualities that I think, you know, you have as a director and like we have on set is we can really be the ones who are that guiding beacon of just, hey, we're going to be calm. We're going to keep moving forward. We'll figure this out. We'll take care of it. If you ever have any lapse in that as someone who is, you know, the director or producer, you're just going to lose all of it. And the more people you have on set, the more differing opinions that can come up. So, you know, do you just want to talk real quickly how everyone's looking at you and you need to, even if you're scared shitless, which I know you've mentioned you've been a few times, you can't show that whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, your job is to steer the ship and have a clear vision, direction of what you want to do. Communicate that very clearly. And just, you know, you have to continue to just move forward no matter what happens, no matter how crazy it's getting. You can't just stop and break. And, you know, I've seen it happen before and you just can't do that. The minute that you start to show emotion as a director, negative emotion, the crew is going to start to pick up on it, and it's going to be very difficult to keep that momentum that we talked about earlier. So no matter what's going on, you know, I will move forward. And, you know, there's obviously times where, you know, something's not working out and I'll pull Kel aside or I'll pull another crew, you know, member aside and do it out of view of everyone else. If a candid conversation needs to happen, it happens offset, so no one else could see that. I'm not yelling at people and breaking them down in front of everybody else, because it's just going to cause panic and fear. And I'm still working on it. I know we had an incident in the Shapeshifter that, you know, we had a reflection in the mirror that was very difficult to fix. We're under, you know, time pressure crunch got to me, and I sat with Kel and we figured it out. If anything, I'm the only one that yells at Kel and we yell at each other, but there's no actual yelling at actors or showing emotion beyond that. And I think that's, you have to be stoic. You have to be a rock. You have to be the guiding force of your movie. The minute you start to be emotional is when, you know, things are going to start to fall apart. And I always try and, you know, I don't really want to ride the highs and the lows. I try and keep a very steady mentality all the way through it. Is like, yeah, you know, the actors are going nuts because we had a really good scene, we had a good sequence, it's turning out well, they're seeing the footage is going well, and I'm just like, on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one, because I really do not relax until I get that final shot, because there's just so much that could go wrong. You know, it's, the sets are just so fragile that I really cannot relax until, you know, we're essentially driving home from the shoot.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing that you brought up. And I think it's really important, again, if you can have a crew that you work with consistently, because I do think one of the benefits, you know, that me and my brother have of working together is, you know, there were those moments where like, we run into a pickle and it's like, this is something critical. And I mean, I had times where like, I brought you aside on Shapeshifter. I was like, dude, we have to pick up the pace. Like you're pushing these shots back. You're pushing these shots back. And it's not like, you know, I go in there and I'm like, Brendan, what are you doing? Like we're 10 pages behind. Like, you know, you keep pushing that stuff here. I bring Brendan aside. I say, hey man, like, are we good? Brendan was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, all right, we'll see. And you know, he proved me wrong on that one, which is great to see. But we have those elements where when we are able to communicate with one another, and I mean, even for the mirror one, it was basically me and him like, no, it doesn't work here, it works here. But we know that we can communicate with each other like that. We never communicate with someone outside of that, just because, again, we know it's both coming from the passion of us wanting to have this final product, and having someone on set like that is super critical. So I would try and recommend, you know, again, we're never going to have that type of emotion go to any other staff member that's not, you know, us, because again, we understand what's going on and the seriousness of it. But it's critical for you as working with someone that you never really let that show. So that's one of the most important parts ever is just, if things are going wrong, you can't be the one pointing out that things are going wrong. It's only going to make it. And when things are going right, you know, it's very easy on set to let's crack another joke or, you know, this is really funny or let's do this. So in those fun times, you basically have to still be the person to dampen that. So you are the one controlling those mood swings as you kind of progress through the set. And the last thing I really want to talk about is, you know, the production bell curve. And what I really feel like the bell curve looks like is it works with actors. It works for everyone on set. You just kind of get into the groove of it. And basically you warm up, you kind of hit your peak, and then you just get exhausted. You get tired and you kind of come down there. Do you want to talk about the bell curve of what you see when it comes to just the acting, people getting used to each other? And then we can hop into how you set your production up to maximize with that bell curve, how you start with easy things, you nail your hard things, and then you kind of come down.
Yeah, I think one of the most important realizations is about the bell curve, because it really helped me schedule these movies improperly. And so just the bell curve is, you know, when you first start day one, the actors are going to be nervous. They're going to be uncomfortable with each other. They're just meeting these other actors for the first time outside of like a table read. There's a lot of pressure. A lot of high price gear, even though we run the small set, still a lot of people, you know, watching you perform. And it's difficult for me to, you know, to get out of a car after driving to a location. And I'm already like in full business mode. I'm, you know, getting everything ready to go. And I'm like, all right, ready, 3, 2, 1, and act. It's very difficult as an actor to hop into that situation. So it does take them a little bit to warm up. Some of our, you know, day one stuff is a little rough. So I've learned to, you know, start them off with something very easy. Not a lot of dialogue stuff. If I can get them, you know, to run around a little bit, you get a little adrenaline going, it kind of loosens them up. So I do a lot of montage stuff, or just basic dialogue stuff that if it doesn't turn out well, you know, we could reshoot it and pick it up later. And that's usually what I recommend for like the first day. And I'm, you know, me as a director and the DP, I'm also getting warmed up. You know, I'm still nervous. I've been nervous for the past 72 hours before this thing started. You know, my cinematic, it takes me a while to get into a groove as a DP. Usually my best stuff is towards the end of the movie. So, you know, it takes me a little bit to, you know, just get myself going. And so my recommendation is to, you know, start with the easy stuff on day one. So day 2, 3, and 4 are going to be your best days. Now, this is on an 8-day shoot schedule. I haven't gone beyond that, so I don't know. 2, 3, and 4 are when everyone is, you know, excited. The nerves have gone down a little bit. They're more comfortable with the production. This is when you really want to put your hard stuff in the movie. This is heavy dialogue stuff. This should be your intro, your climax, any high intensity scenes, anything that's very technical wise, as far as like shooting it, should be done on these days. Pretty much all your very, very, very difficult stuff should be done on day 2, 3, and 4. And I know you don't want to do this, because this is how, you know, essentially I schedule my movies before Girl on Camera 13. I always save the hardest stuff for last, because you kind of want to push it off. You don't want to start with the hardest stuff. You're not very confident in yourself, and you don't want to start with the hard stuff. And that's a grave mistake. You will find yourself in a lot of pain. We found ourselves in a lot of pain. And the minute that I started putting the hard stuff first, everything was much easier. The Shapeshifter movie was just absolutely phenomenally beautiful as far as scheduling it, because this is what we did. Because when you hit day 5, 6, 7, and 8, people are starting to get tired. They're getting mentally tired. They're getting physically tired, and their performances are going to start to slack. Their brain is going to start to say, hey, listen, just try and find the easiest way out of this situation. Get out of this situation. You'll never have to see these people again. And I can just leave. I get my paycheck and I can leave. And that's not the fault to any of the actors or anything. My brain's telling me that too. It's like, hey, dude, you're carrying this camera around for 18 hours a day for the last 5 or 6 days. Why don't you just, you know, phone in and take it easy? Like, just get this scene real quick and then, you know, finish this movie. It doesn't need to be very good. You can just upload it and move on to the next one. And that's what my brain's telling me. And you have to constantly fight it. So if I'm fighting that, I know the actors and my crew are fighting that as well. So, you know, having this the hard scene stacked first and then moving from hard to medium difficulty to easy difficulty, you're kind of, you know, walking downhill or running downhill in our case. And that's just crucial, because when you get to that final day, you just really want to have very easy scenes. You want to have B-roll scenes. You have montages. And if you could finish that, it's just such an easy way to finish a movie shoot. It's so smooth, and it's just something that I'd highly recommend. Now, when you're scheduling this and when you're on set, your brain's going to tell you, do not do the hard stuff first. I want to build up and build that momentum up first. Build your momentum up on day one and then make the jump, because it's much easier to make the jump on day 2, 3, and 4 than it is on day 7 and 8, especially if you didn't do your pre-production properly and you're trying to figure out how to actually do these scenes. At that point, you're not going to get a movie done. So that's how I schedule now. My experience is it's night and day to what we did with the first 8. It's much easier and it's so much less stressful. And I would highly recommend, if there's anything you're going to take away from this podcast, is this is how you should possibly schedule your movies.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's such critical, and like it's something that's so apparent in all the movies when we look back now. And I mean, you know, just to kind of highlight it, like when you're on set as an actor and it's the first time you're doing it, if you're doing the heavy dialogue stuff right away and you screw up your line and the director sells cut, you feel bad. So you're kind of throwing people into those environments and you want to warm them up in those first few days. But then from there, as you said, I mean, day 2, we jumped full into it. I mean, we were like, we're going to knock out the intro and we're going to knock out the climax. And the next day, we're going to knock out the torch climax and we're going to get everyone out in there. And then the final day, we have all the action stuff and we're done. And what ends up happening is the confidence boost of seeing those. And again, we have the on-site editor and myself are tremendous, knowing that we just put the dots together. And that one day that you're talking about, you know, where we had like a record amount of filming, the entire time we were saying that, and I was being the, you know, Debbie Downer of like, hey man, we got all these scenes to do. What are you doing? What are you doing? Brendan just kept saying, we got easy stuff. It's easy stuff. It's easy stuff. It's easy stuff. And sure enough, the team was tired. The team was, you know, exhausted. And if you look back at all of our movies, I can point to you the scenes where the actors are tired. You can see it. They have bags under their eyes. Like, they're physically, mentally exhausted. Cause again, this is a tough shoot for anyone. You know, we're feeling it as well too. And you can point directly to it. And because we structured with this bell curve so much in mind, we were able to crush those scenes. The morale was high the entire time, because the whole time we're filming, you know, Brendan's mentioning it's just easy from here on. It's just easy from here on. And we're able to do that. We're able to show the team, hey, we did this. On the other end, one of the most worrying things you can ever have is, okay, well, we have the finale. Okay, well, we have this. So much so that a lot of times, if you look at our finales, we had to do pickups. We rushed it. It was done, in and out, and done. And so real quick, just to touch on the bell curve, do you want to talk about what happens when you don't follow this? Because there's a lot of movies. I mean, Invited, we had to do a pickup for the finale. We had to do a lot of stuff that cost us more money, could potentially derail the movie and just destroy it. So you saying this is one of the most important things, do you want to just highlight real quickly? Because I completely agree. If you do not respect this bell curve and you schedule it wrong, you're going to miss critical elements of your movie and you will not be able to have a finished product you can upload without pickups.
Yeah, I mean, go back and look at our movies. Go look at The Invited, go look at The Morgan Estate, and go look at The Devil in the Room. All three of those movies, we saved the climax for last, and the climax, I think, suffers. And it may not be completely apparent at first, because we probably did climax pickups for all three of those movies. Actually, I'm 100% we did climax pickups for all three of those movies. And that cost us a lot of time and money. I know to go back to that Morgan Estate house added 20% to our budget to get everyone back out there, to get all the equipment back out there, and to shoot for one extra day, added 20% to the budget. And that's just unacceptable. And that would have been completely solved if we would have just stacked the hardest stuff first and, you know, followed this scheduling outline that I just mentioned before. But we didn't know that because we didn't have the experience. And your natural instinct is going to be to save the stuff, you know, to last that you don't know how to do or you don't feel comfortable with, because you don't want to, you know, start that film and have something that's not very good. But if that's your feeling, then you failed in pre-production. That's just it. You failed in pre-production. You should always go into a shoot, and no matter what order you put those scenes in, you should always feel comfortable that you're able to do and complete them. If you're having to ask yourself, how do I do this? Failed in pre-production. And that's just the bottom line. And I think that two reasons why, you know, a lot of these movies just end up in the void or never get released is failure in pre-production and then failure in scheduling. And I think that, you know, just understanding how to do two of those things will save you a lot of heartache and just exponentially increase your odds of actually having a finished product.
I really can't agree more. I mean, honestly, it is something where you see that so clearly once you have experience and what the major issues are. And if you guys can follow that mindset we outlined here, specifically the bell curve as well, you're going to have tremendous amounts of success. And if we can help out one indie filmmaker from avoiding the void and just, you know, giving up on this, I honestly think it would make me happy to no end, because it's tough. I mean, this is one of the hardest industries out there, and I have nothing but respect for anyone who's going out there to try and make their dream come true. So, you know, hopefully that will kind of give you guys an overall mindset. Next episode, we are going to hop into more tactical information about how to maintain momentum, how to schedule on the bell curve. All of those things are really going to hopefully give you some more ideas and what you can do to make sure that your movie gets through the production process and smoothly into the post-production and editing. So with that being said, you know, be sure to go ahead, take a look at our links online, join our Discord community and all of those fun things. But until we see you again, have a good one.